Anyway, before we get into the story for today, I just want to fill out some of the background information. Just go to the big picture first. And when God originally called Israel out of Egypt and chose Israel to be his nation, he gave them a mission. And that mission was to keep alive the worship of one God and one God only until Christ came. They were surrounded by nations that believed in many gods, and they were the only ones that had this idea of one God. And so it was paramount for them to maintain that worship, to be the place where that was kept alive. On the other hand, you had the Philistines and all the nations in Canaan who, their way of worship was, you worshipped whatever you felt like worshipping. It was very utilitarian. To them, their gods were basically tools that they could use to get whatever they wanted. So you needed something, you would go to this god over here for that. And you needed something else, well, there was that god over there. And it was very much a self-centered worship that they practiced. So when you get the Israelites invading and settling in Canaan, you get these two different spiritual cultures that are coming and clashing. And out of that, you get a lot of tension between. The Israelites felt threatened by the Canaanite nations and their way of worshiping. The Canaanite nations didn't understand where the Israelites were coming from and felt threatened. And by the time we reach the period where we're in, this tension had blown into a full-blown military conflict. It seems like every third chapter in the book of Samuel, there's some sort of battle or war going on between the Israelites and one of the other nations around. The problem that the Israelites had with this was that they usually were at the short end of the stick in the military conflict. All the nations around them, the Philistines, had better technology and so better weapons, and basically the Israelites were the punching bag of the Middle East at that point in time. And so they went to God and they asked for a king. They asked for someone to come rescue them, someone to be their hero, their champion, to be their Superman, their Captain America. So God gave them King Saul. And that part of the kingly mission, Saul did. He took care of, he defended Israel. But when God chose Saul to be king, there was another mission that was there too. And it was the same mission that he had given all of Israel, which was to keep the worship of one God and one God only alive. And so when what happened was God asked Saul to eradicate the Amalekites, God wasn't just asking Saul to go to war. He was asking him to keep that mission alive because the Amalekites were not just a physical threat, but a spiritual threat to the Israelites. They had a completely different way of worship, and the reason for God asking Saul to attack there was because came directly out of that spiritual conflict. So when Saul disobeyed there, Saul was rejecting that mission. Saul was rejecting that part of what God had called him to do. And it says in Samuel that Saul rejected the word of the Lord, and the Lord rejected Saul as king over Israel. So because Saul says, I don't want to be that type of king, I don't want to worship God, I want to worship myself, God instead looks for someone in Israel who has a heart after God, who will take up that mission and carry it. And so God finds David and anoints him to be the next king of Israel. He calls David to that mission. Okay, so the text for today is 1 Samuel 27, and I'll just read through it, and I hope that, yeah. Anyway. But David thought to himself, one of these days I will be destroyed by the hand of Saul. The best thing I can do is to escape to the land of the Philistines. Then Saul will give up searching for me anywhere in Israel, and I will slip out of his hand." So David and the 600 men with him left, and they went over to Achish, son of Maok, king of Gath. David and his men settled in Gath with Achish. Each man had his family with him, and David had his two wives, Ahinoam of Jezreel and Abigail of Carmel, the widow of Nabal. When Saul was told that David had fled to Gath, he no longer searched for him. Then David said to Achish, "If I have found favor in your eyes, let a place be assigned to me in one of the country towns, that I may live there. Why should your servant live in the royal city with you?" So on that day, Achish gave him Ziklag, and it has belonged to the kings of Judah ever since. David lived in Philistine territory 1 year and 4 months. Now David and his men went up to and raided the Gerishites, the Gerizzites, and the Amalekites. From ancient times, these people had lived in the land extending to Shur and Egypt. Whenever David attacked an area, he did not keep a man or woman, or he did not leave a man or woman alive, but took sheep and cattle, donkey and camels, and clothes. Then he returned to Achish. When Achish asked, "Where did you go raiding today?" David would say, "Against the Negev of Judah, or against the Negev of Jeramel, or against the Negev of the Kenites." He did not leave a man or woman alive to be brought to Gath, for he thought, "They might inform on us and say, 'This is what David did.'" And such was his practice as long as he lived in Philistine territory. Achish trusted David and said to himself, "He has become so odious to his people, the Israelites, that he will be my servant forever." So when this story opens, David has been running from King Saul for about 10 years now. David has been waiting for God to show up and fulfill that promise of kingship that God gave him when he anointed him for 10 years. It's been over a decade almost that David has been waiting. And God has not been doing anything as far as David is concerned. He's still on the run. God has not shown up. So David decides to take matters into his own hands. He goes over to the Philistines. He switches sides. And at first glance, it seems to work. Saul gives up chasing David, and David finally gets to settle down with his family in peace. But the thing is, whenever we take matters into our own hands, whenever we settle for our own way instead of God's way, whenever we give up waiting for God, we end up settling for less. God wants what is best for us. Not what we think is best for us or what we want, but what is truly best for us. And so whenever we take things into our own hands, we're not getting what God wants for us. With David, one of the ways that that worked out is when he took matters in his own hands, he ended up having to betray his country. In the next chapter, if you read the first few verses, what you see going on there is King Achish was not doing David a favor by protecting him. David was making a deal with King Achish. And it kind of went along these lines. If you'll protect me from King Saul, I will fight for you, and I will fight against the Israelites for you. And at the start of chapter 28, King Achish says, "You must understand that you and your men will accompany me in the army as they're going out to attack Israel." So David's taking matters into his own hands put him into direct conflict with his home country, with where he grew up, with the people that he grew up with. I had a tough time putting this message together. I really struggled with it. There were many days where I was reading through the text and God just wasn't there. He wasn't showing up. I wasn't hearing anything. And I was tempted to just give up on this message and give up waiting for God to show up and to take matters into my own hands. I have something I wrote a while back that I could have pulled out and it would have worked. But I'm convinced that if I had done that, that something would end up missing, that I'd be settling for second best. And I guess you guys can judge whether or not that's the case. Now, getting back to David, even though David gave up on God, God didn't give up on David. In chapter 29, I'll just quickly summarize part of what happens there. God uses the Philistine commanders to mistrust David, to be afraid of David. So the Philistines are marching out to attack the Israelites, and David and his 600 men are with the Philistines. So when they're marching out, these commanders are afraid that David will turn on them, and they force King Achish to send David back home. And so even though David was, by his own actions, was put in this dilemma, was put in a spot where he had to fight his own people, God uses the most unlikely people to bail him out. God is faithful even when we are not. I don't know where you guys are at. I don't know, maybe some of you, you're waiting for God to show up. Or maybe you're convinced that God isn't going to show up, that God is a no-show, and you've taken things into your own hands. Whatever the case is, I know that God is faithful, and he will show up. Whether you're still waiting him for or not, God's going to come through. So Saul didn't just stop chasing David because he didn't want to attack the Philistines. He gave up chasing David because David was no longer a threat to Saul's throne. David was no longer in a position to be the king of Israel when he was in Gath with the Philistines. And so what we see here is David was not just giving up on his country. David was also giving up on the promise and the mission that God had given him to be the next king of Israel. Once again, though David gave up on his mission, God didn't give up on him. You remember how when I was explaining the background, I talked about Saul and the Amalekites? It's no coincidence that here in chapter 27, we see David attacking the Amalekites. We see David doing what Saul didn't, where Saul refused to obey God, and where Saul refused his mission as king of Israel. We see David, even though he's in Philistine territory, and he's not the king of Israel, God gives him this opportunity to take up that spiritual leadership that Saul didn't, and run with it. And we see David doing that. So basically what you have is David gives up on his mission. David gives up on being who God called him to be. And we see God giving him that opportunity and calling him back to doing that again. One of the biggest things that I had to deal with after my daughter Ariana died was a loss of a sense of purpose of my mission, because I had always thought that I would be a father, and that was the mission that God called me to. And so when Ariana was born, I was all ready to go. I was pumped up. I was going to be the best dad ever. And 2 days later, that was all stripped from me. I was there and I was looking at it, and my mission was gone. Who was I? What was I to be? And that was something that I really did struggle with and try to find out what the new mission was that God had in line for me, or where it was going. Now, God has restored my mission to me. Is that my son over there that's crying right now? But he has given Anna Marie and I our son Timothy. He's happy, he's healthy, and he's everything that we could ask for. And so I'm back with the mission. Now, I don't know about you, but some of you may very well know what your mission is in life and where you're going. But if you're anything like me, that question comes up every now and again. What's God calling me to? What's my mission? What's my purpose? Maybe you're coming at it from David's point where you've given up on the mission because it's too hard. Or maybe it's more that life has come along and it's taken it away from you and you feel lost with the mission. Maybe it's just been so long and you've forgotten what your mission is. I know that even though I may have forgotten, God has not. And God is always at work in my life and in our lives to call us back to be the people that he has called us to be. And the mission and the gift that he has given you, he is faithfully following up and presenting you with opportunities and calling you to live that out. And if you're wondering what your mission is, take some time and ask him. Or ask people you trust to help figure it out. However, in my opinion, the biggest thing that David gave up when he went over to the Philistines wasn't Israel, wasn't his mission. It was the worship. If you remember at the beginning, I talked about these two different ways of worship. This way of worshiping God because of who he is. Because he is the one and only God, because he is the true God, and worshiping him. And on the other hand, you have the Philistines and the surrounding nations, where what people worshipped was basically themselves. They had all these gods, but at the end effect, those were just means for them to get what they wanted. Was very utilitarian. And so when David moved from Israel to Gath, he was moving from where God was worshipped to the capital of the Philistines, to probably the center of where this self-centered, do-whatever-you-want worship took place. And the pressure for him to conform, to fit in, to not stand out, I'm sure was huge. In my life recently, the way that that's come to the fore is at work. We've started this new project, and around this project, there's this culture of overtime, of doing overtime whether or not it's necessary, just to get ahead and just to prove that you're worthy. And just to, yeah. And for me, the pressure is there to show that I'm part of the team, that I'm putting in, that I'm pulling my weight, that I'm worth the trust the company has put in me to be part of this project. And to some degree, I have given in to that pressure, and I've done overtime and taken away time that I should have been spending with my son, with my family, with my wife, and with my God. I'm sure you guys can relate in some way with, in our culture, the pressure to value what the world values, to live the way that they live, and to give up on what you know is the way, and people don't understand why you worship God, because it doesn't make sense to them. Getting back to David, once again, God shows up. Where David makes the mistake, God is faithful. So what we see when David asks King Achish if he can move away from Gath into the countryside, God gives him Ziklag. What you need to understand about Ziklag is that it was originally an Israelite settlement. That it was originally a place where God was worshipped. The Philistines had taken it over. But it was still a place where God was worshipped. And so when David moved from Gath to Ziklag, he moved from a place where the worship was all about me, myself, and I, to a place where the worship was about God. The other thing about sick leg is God didn't just give it to him for the time being, for as long as he needed it. It says, and it has belonged to the kings of Judah ever since. So David goes and asks God for, asks for a bit of space. And God gives him an entire town and gives him no strings attached for good. That's the way God loves to give gifts. He gives them free and so much more than what you can imagine. So if you are finding yourself in Gath, if you're finding yourself at a place where God isn't worshipped, where it's something else, where it's something centered around us, around human beings, and you yearn to be in Siklag, you yearn to be in a place where God is worshipped, that's you. Ask God. He longs to move you to that place. He longs to take you and move you where he is worshipped. Just one note, though. If you do ask him, be prepared. God might give you a whole lot more than you asked for. So, yeah, that's it. Thanks. So, if Linda and Jonathan, you guys want to come up and lead us in communion.